The Armstrong and Getty podcast is brought to you by Griffin and Reed Eye Care. KSTE.com.
You tell people yell inchi, you know, back. If they don't see the gun,
you may have to make contact with that vehicle to let it know that it needs to move out of the way.
If they don't stop, then the second burst goes into the engine. If they continue to come, then the third one goes into the driver.
Did you hit it?
We are Armstrong and Getty. Welcome to the show. It is 8:04, 4 past 8 o'clock. What were you just listening to? You're probably wondering.
That was a clip from Shadow Company, documentary directed, put together by Nick Bichinich, who joins us now. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Very good. The documentary's about PMCs, private military companies, a term I think many of us had never heard before.
Private military companies.
I think some of us are now familiar with the idea that there are, quote, contractors in Iraq, but they're not building swimming pools. Tell us about the private companies and what they're doing in Iraq.
Well, you're right. The film is about private military companies. It's a phrase that that many people use. There's also another phrase, which it's funny how often in the private sector, or so-called, you know, private warfare sector, there's a lot of people who refer to them as private security companies. There are some people who use the term modern-day mercenaries. Technically speaking, all of these terms are interchangeable. What this means is it usually refers to guys who have spent a number of years in the military, not necessarily just the American military, could be the British, could be Australian, you know, could be South Africans, it could be a number of different countries. So these are guys who were soldiers in a regular army, regular nation-state army for a number of years, and are now doing work in the private sector. They do a variety of different kinds of work. They could be protecting individuals, they could be protecting convoys, they could be protecting locations.
Who are they working for?
They're working for various different companies that are involved in the reconstruction effort. But the key thing is they're a vital part of the war effort. And although no one, sadly, knows the exact number of these guys currently working in Iraq, and bear in mind, this phenomenon is not confined to just Iraq alone. I know we often talk about Iraq because it's on a lot of people's minds, but there's approximately 50,000 or more of these guys working in Iraq alone. So that's a very significant part of the war effort, and a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Well, are they in general, these 50,000 or however many it is, people in the private military companies working on our side?
They're in general working on our side, quote-unquote. But the big problem isn't so much that they're running riots. The problem is that, you know, a lot of people in traditional, let's just say, various aspects of traditional media that could be left-leaning, a lot of people will often criticize military contractors because they'll throw around terms like mercenaries. They'll say, oh, it's a profit-motivated corporation in the business of war. You know, what is this really doing? But the key point is that these guys aren't necessarily doing a bad thing. It's just that A, we don't know exactly what they're doing. B, we don't know how many of them there are. And C, they're not liable in exactly the same way. They're not the same sort of controls that are put in place that we would have on our soldiers. So that's the key issue that we wanted to bring to people's attention.
I should point out that Shadow Company, and we just watched a bit of it as we got ready to talk to you. Number one, I couldn't take my eyes off it. Number two, you tried very hard to just take a look at it. You are not Michael Moore. This is not some sort of hardcore opinion piece. It's just a fascinating world that most of us know nothing about.
Yeah, I mean, you see, there are filmmakers that are far better known than I that tackle political subjects. This is the first feature-length film of any kind that I've done. But what we've got a lot of praise for is exactly what you just said. People like Michael Moore and Robert Greenwald make movies that are basically polemic. They're not really what I would consider a documentary film. They're propaganda designed to promote a particular political point of view. As far as I'm concerned, truth has a nasty habit of not taking political sides. And if that being true, that means that we felt it was our duty to simply, rather than bludgeon people to death with a point of view and try and convince them that we are correct, we want to present information so that people can make up their own mind.
Well, and whether, you know, regardless of your motive, I mean, it's an interesting enough story on its own without trying to convince anybody of anything. I mean, how many of us know there are 50,000 some soldiers privately paid moving around Iraq, doing whatever? I don't think
some
most of us know that.
Protecting our troops. I thought our troops protected our troops. Well, I think a lot of people that
They don't just to be correct. It's not so much the protecting the troops. It's protecting private companies, other private companies that are involved in the war effort.
I see.
So, for example, you know, a given company has a construction contract that's supposed to, you know, rebuild a particular aspect of Iraqi infrastructure. This is a key part of the war effort. You know, the U.S. government pledged to rebuild Iraq, and when this particular private company has various members of its teams, its engineering teams, or whoever it might be, or perhaps food convoys or material convoys that need to move around Iraq. Iraq is a war zone, so these people need protection. Now, usually, you would have in a war that perhaps took time, I don't know, took place 20 years ago, you'd have had aspects of the military that's involved in that conflict protecting those kinds of convoys. There simply isn't enough U.S. military in Iraq to provide these sorts of tasks, so that part of security has been outsourced. And this is the fascinating aspect that we're investigating in Shadow Company.
Nick Bichinich is on the line. He's the director of Shadow Company. Are these private contractors' rules of engagement the same as our soldiers?
The rules of engagement are very similar to the soldiers, but the key thing that differentiates them, and the private companies are very often very quick to state that if you speak to them about it, is that they are there in a defensive posture. Their job is to protect, not to engage. So, for example, if a military convoy is driving around Baghdad and it gets fired upon, it more often than not will seek to close with and destroy the enemy because that's what they're there for. However, if that happens to a private contractor convoy that's protecting a particular individual, yes, they will fire the weapons back if they are fired upon. But their primary role is to protect the individual that is in their convoy, so they will leave the scene. Mm-hmm. They do not engage with the enemy. Now, that's a very fundamental difference because it allows them to always state, well, we're just defensive. We're not anything offensive. We're not part of the war. But in a conflict that takes place in close quarter urban environments like it is in Iraq, and where the contractors wear the same sort of equipment, use the same weapons, and basically look the same. They drive armored vehicles. They have belt-fed machine guns. They look the same as the military. To be honest, if the enemy perceives them as part of the war effort, they effectively are part of the war effort.
Sure. I think most Americans could come within 100 of the number of American troops killed in the conflict so far. How many of these private contractors who are not mourned or noted except by their families, as far as I can tell, how many of them have lost their lives?
Remember how I was saying a couple of minutes ago that one of the sad things is that we don't really even know how many of these guys there are?
Yeah.
Well, no one's really officially tracking these figures. As at the time that we had made the movie, the figure was somewhere in the region of 230, 250 that had lost their lives. But the key thing is exactly what you said. When these guys lose their lives, there is no requirement for the president to meet the body. There is no flag-draped coffin that comes back. There's no real system in place that honors the deaths that took place. And this is one of the sad things, is they're essentially the unsung casualties of this war. And, you know, people will argue, they'll say, yeah, but they're getting so much money, who really cares? But I don't know that that's really the point.
But they're true, true volunteers. Not to say that people in our military are not, but you might have volunteered for the Army however many years ago, you know, assuming you wouldn't go to war and hoping you wouldn't. But these guys are true volunteers. I assume you sign up for this, you know, one of these jobs knowing this is what I'm going to do in Iraq, and if I don't like it, you could quit and leave.
That's exactly right. But you got to remember that they are getting paid handsomely for that particular volunteer job. So, you know, some of these guys can pull in upwards of $500, $600 a day. As recently as a year ago, certain types of tasks in Iraq were getting paid $1,000 a day. So that's one of the reasons why people throw around the term mercenary, because they sort of look, they go...
Because they are.
Well, that's the thing.
By almost every definition. Right.
Well, if you ask them, a lot of the guys don't feel uncomfortable with the word. And one of the key things we discuss in the film is, what does it mean to be a mercenary? You know, why does it carry these negative connotations? Because personally, I think that one of the things we show is that it's not a simple thing. There is no real black or white. You know, there are no simple answers when you start to privatize something that traditionally was basically a government-controlled task like warfare. It suddenly, everything becomes a one big gray area. So there are certainly guys that are unscrupulous in this environment, but there's also an awful lot of guys that are simply doing the same thing they always did as part of the army, and they're still doing it for the same side, if you wish. They just happen to be privatizing their efforts, which is really not that uncommon. I mean, it happens in every industry, from garbage collection to now warfare.
Nick, I would like you to investigate everything. I really respect your tone of just curiosity as opposed to advocacy as you're looking at that. We're tipping our cap to you.
I wish more reporters went at stories from the angle of I'm just interested in what the story is here. What have we ever had any scrapes between our military and some of these private outfits where their goals don't match up?
There have been a couple of instances, and it's quite difficult to tell what these are based on. You know, some people will argue that sometimes they're based on ego. For the sake of argument, there was a set of fairly well reported within the private military sector, but of course the general public doesn't hear about it. But there was a company called Zapata Engineering that got involved in a scrape with the U.S. Marine Corps, where essentially the U.S. Marines picked up a group of these contractors at a checkpoint and said, you know, you guys were driving too aggressively and you fired back indiscriminately, and essentially they kicked these guys around a little bit, and a lot of things were said that were later regretted by a number of individuals, things like, you know, where's your $1,000 now and all that sort of stuff. So you can imagine there's a lot of ego that goes on, because although the contractors are essentially, almost all of them used to be soldiers or special units of the police, so they have an understanding, they know who they're dealing with when they deal with the military, because they're their buddies, essentially. The big problem is that you can imagine that if you're a soldier and you see someone who's driving around, who's putting his life in harm's way in the exact same way as you are, yet is getting paid 7 or 8 times the kind of money that you're pulling in, you kind of start to wonder, and you go, well, you know what, this is kind of annoying. And guess what? The special forces, not just in the U.S., but also in the U.K. and many other modern armies, they're leaving. They're leaving en masse because they're sensing the opportunity. They're chasing the money. And who can blame them? I mean, you know, if you've got a guy who can basically, he puts in a couple of years in the SEALs, and then he just quits and goes to work for the sake of argument, Blackwater, and makes a huge amount of more money and continues to do so because the conflict in Iraq has essentially been going strong for a number of years. So this market is in no danger of going away. Who can blame these guys for choosing to make that kind of decision?
Yeah, that's an interesting angle, too, because we've got millions of dollars invested. You know, you hear that figure every now and then, what it costs to train a SEAL or, mm-hmm. you know, a special forces person, and then they go off and...
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's essentially a tax subsidized way to basically the military, the special forces environments becomes a tax subsidized way to get training for your next career, if you wish. And by the way, I mean, you know, people talk about talk about the drawdown of the troops in Iraq that might be coming in a few months. Who knows? They've been talking about it for a while. But who do you think is going to pick up the slack when the troops start to disappear? All the private sector. So, I mean, there's many companies that are essentially rubbing their hands with some various different degrees of glee because
right.
they're thinking, well, this is great because the military is going to draw down, and that means there's going to be more opportunities for us to get involved. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's, like I said, and like many things that we discuss in the film, there's no real clear, easy answers. But what there certainly is there's a lack of knowledge and a lack of information, especially amongst the general public, as to who these guys are, what they do, and why. And those are the key questions that we sought to answer in the film.
We're pressed for time, but I've got to ask you, what surprised you most when you looked into this?
The thing that surprised me the most is basically two things that are very easy to summarize. One is that the sheer number of these guys that were involved. You know, I, for some reason, when I first started looking into it, I'd imagine, well, there's a few hundred, maybe a few thousand of these guys. But I didn't think that the numbers would be so significant. I didn't think that essentially the U.S. war machine wasn't actually able to function without these contractors. And by the way, the numbers we're talking about before, the 50,000, that refers to the guys who actually carry weapons. I'm not talking about the guys who are cooking food or the guys who are, you know, transporting garbage or cleaning latrines, and a huge amount of those are contractors as well. So I'm talking about specifically the term military contractors. It's kind of a nice dovetail to how we started this discussion. I'm talking about the guys that actually carry weapons every day and are
right.
supposed to use them as part of their job.
And what's the second point?
And the second point is that I was very surprised by the fact that there was two different clear attitudes. There was a difference between the sense in which the Americans perceived themselves and the Brits and the South Africans. It was a sort of strange set of national stereotypes that we encountered, especially in Iraq. And we discussed that quite a lot in there. You know, the Americans that we spoke to often perceived themselves as a key part of the war effort, but yet sometimes that ends up blinding them because of the fact that they feel like they're, it's hard to describe, they feel like they're correct. Whereas the Brits and the South Africans, in a way, they're more mercenary because they don't care, because it's a job for them. But at the same time, then so it's sort of an odd thing to consider that they're more mercenary, yet somehow that makes them more efficient at their job. So
well, I'm going to see this movie. I'll tell you.
Nick Bichinich is the director of Shadow Company. It's playing at the Roxy in San Francisco. You can find out a lot more at shadowcompany.com. That's shadowcompany.com. And, of course, we'll have a link on our website to it.
Thanks for your time today.
Nick, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys. And for those who can't make it to the Roxy in San Francisco, because I know your show goes out in a hell of a lot more places than that, the DVD is actually already available. It has 3 hours of additional features and full commentary.
Oh.
And a lot of guys love that. And it's been selling very well, and it's available directly from shadowcompany.com.
And we can't get to wait to get ours. Hint, hint.
Thanks,
Nick.
All right, see you later. Shadowcompany.com.
Yeah, wow. Wow, good stuff. Good guy.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Boy, I wish
many
I was
different levels.
I wish I was the kind of guy that had the skill set to do that. What an adventure that would be. But I don't have any skills.
I got the skills.
Bow hunting skills, computer skills. I don't have any skills.
Skills, yes. Stones, no.
820. You can comment if you like at 1-866-331-TALK. You're listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.
The Armstrong and Getty Podcast. Talk 650 KSTE.com.